How's it going, everybody? Brian Alpers and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio. It is October 30, 2023, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We got a lot of news to get into here today. And just before the show started, you were watching the end of that Tyson Fury and Ngannou fight.
I watched the whole fight, yeah.
What did you think about it?
Did you watch it?
I did not see it, no.
You did not watch the fight?
I did not. I got a lot of stuff to do on a Halloween weekend. I got kids.
I got a lot of stuff.
Parties every day.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, it's a historic fight. The, it was certainly not what everyone expected. When it comes to, you know, obviously these MMA fighters going into boxing, they, other than Anderson Silva beating Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., which was a big upset, but, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. was a no can, you know, he wasn't ready to fight or anything like that. I mean, in this one, I think that Fury was not in his best shape. I think that was pretty clear. So nevertheless, Ngannou did a great job considering how much of a skill disadvantage he had in the fight. He scored the knockdown. I mean, it was not, you know, he knocked him down in the third round, which was the key blow of the fight. And it was not a knockdown in the sense, I mean, it was a knockdown, it was a clean knockdown, but it was not like he knocked him out or like when Deontay Wilder nailed Fury in, I guess, his most famous knockdown where, you know, it was impressive that he got up. And this one, you could tell he's going to get up and he's going to continue to fight. And, but still, you know, I mean, it was split decision. I had it 95-94 for Fury, but there were close rounds. I would have said that I had the first round was for Fury, the second round for Fury, third round Ngannou 10-8, 4 and 5 for Fury, 6 for Ngannou, 7 for Fury, 8 Ngannou, 9 Fury, and 10 Ngannou. So I mean, and several of those rounds could have gone either way. So, I mean, it was a fight that, it was a very close fight. What I thought was really interesting was after round 9, and I had that, you know, and two of the, you know, one of the judges had the scores exactly the same as I did. And then one of them had it the other way for Ngannou. And then one of them had Fury with a you know, 96-93 edge. And in that, but going into the 10th round, the Vegas odds had Ngannou favored, even though I had him down by 2 points. So a lot of the bettors, I guess, thought because of the close round or maybe just because of the odds or whatever. Although that point, it was very interesting how that turned around. And I think maybe in a lot of ways, too, when people watched the fight, it was not a super exciting fight. And the rounds were all competitive for the most part. I don't think there was any really one-sided rounds. And the big blow was, like, if you're judging the fight as a whole, and you go, what was the strongest blow? I mean, Fury did land more punches. And but the strongest blow was Ngannou's blow, obviously. And, you know, for a guy, I mean, it was totally historic because, and they kept talking about that in the commentary. I mean, you're talking about like an 0-0 fighter against an undefeated, you know, best heavyweight of this generation. I mean, it should have been a slaughter. As tough as Ngannou is and as hard a puncher as he is, and they kept pushing the idea that he's on some system, whatever it is, that thing, that little punching thing that they got in the UFC gym, that nobody's ever hit it harder than Ngannou. So there's like this punch stat thing, and he's, in theory, the hardest puncher in all of combat sports. And he may very well be. He's thrown some incredible punches. I mean, we've seen it in UFC, that when he hits you, but that's also with smaller gloves. But, you know, he's probably going to do more boxing. I know there's a lot of talk of Ngannou against Deontay Wilder. I think there'll be a lot of interest in that one. And they may do this one again. And I don't think Fury took him seriously, considering he booked another fight in December. Whether he's going to do that fight now after this one, you know, who knows? You know, he went 10 rounds.
You know, I didn't see this fight, Dave, but is this like, I mean, how many times does this have to repeat throughout history? Like, this has happened been anything so many times. No, the guy that like, oh, there's no chance this guy could possibly beat this guy, and then
the guy goes
in a little bit out of shape, and
but this is actually completely unprecedented in the history of boxing.
Well, I know there's, because it is.
There's never been an 0-0 boxer.
It's the same exact story of the guy.
It's the Rocky One story.
Sure, and it's happened in real life countless times. This person cannot be beaten.
Well, there's no such person.
You watch the fight and they're either beaten or, you know, somebody comes very close and, you know, you watch the fight and you have the same thought. This guy didn't take this person seriously and they paid for it. Happens all the time.
But it's never happened like this in heavyweight boxing history.
Well, no, I mean, Mike Tyson, this fight, but this happens all the time.
Mike Tyson and Buster Douglas would be the closest one. But Buster Douglas was at least, and as they pointed out, Buster Douglas was at least a real boxer. Although, and Mike Tyson was also in many ways an overrated boxer, but, you know, I mean, that was a bigger upset because at that point in time, nobody thought anyone could beat Mike Tyson and, you know, he got beat. In this one, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, look, if Ngannou had landed one more punch at some point during the fight, he'd have won the fight. You know, I mean, just one, you know, one more knockout and that reverses it. If he had thrown a few more punches in one of many different rounds, he would have, one of the rounds would have flipped. There were rounds that could have flipped. He could have won. And the thing is, it was then what happens because this was a non-championship fight because of the fact that nobody's going to sanction this as a title fight when the guy's 0-0. So it would be something for an MMA fighter to beat, you know, in a non-title fight. Obviously, you would probably wind up with a championship fight. And they, you know, if their round flipped, they would have done a rematch, I guess, for the championship with a 1-0 boxer, which still would have been unprecedented. And I think if Fury would take it seriously, or would have taken it more seriously, I'm not saying he didn't. He trained for 12 weeks for this. But, you know, I mean, he didn't look in his best shape or anything like that. You know, in a rematch, I saw the odds for a rematch, he would still be favored. He would probably take it more seriously. But still, it was, you know, something, you know, an amazing, amazing performance by Ngannou. He was the moral winner. Without a doubt, he was the moral winner. Even if he had lost by a wider margin and had not scored the knockdown, it's still a moral win. The fact that he fought a competitive fight, that he won, the fact he won even one round was a moral victory in my mind against, with this kind of disparity of experience and skill. So it's, you know, like when this fight happened, I wasn't taking it seriously and most people weren't, you know, I know a lot of boxing fans, and not one of them bought the freaking pay-per-view. After it was over, I asked a whole bunch of my friends, you know, who buy most of your big boxing matches, and I was like, nah. And I would have been the same way. You know, I buy a lot of the big boxing matches. I had no interest in buying this one, partially because I'm tired of these, what I would call, you know, the gimmick fights. I'm not interested in, you know, it's like at first when you do them, you know, it's the novelty and everything like this, but they've veered more and more towards this. And, you know, like, you know, the biggest promoted fights are the Jake Paul and the Logan Paul and the ones that get the most attention because of, you know, social media and everything like that. And that's fine and good. You know, you're going to do that. You're going to promote what you got. But to me, it was like, when you, you know, you can only go down that path. And everyone that has tried to go down that path, you have success at first because of celebrity fighting. And then after a while, it burns out because people have seen it. And I don't know what, the numbers are. And it doesn't matter because one of the things, you know, and I mean, it was funny because, you know, there were so many celebrities there, you know, from the MMA world, you know, they brought in Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell and several others, and from the boxing world, you know, Duran and, you know, Mike Tyson, of course, and, you know, Barrera and Morales and all these, you know, the whole thing, and Vince McMahon and Undertaker were brought in from wrestling. And it was, did you see the Vince McMahon clip?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
Yeah, he's looking old. He's got a cane.
He's walking with a cane. Yeah. With a cane. Yeah, well, he had major back surgery.
Yeah.
He had major back surgery. Well, I mean, the thing I thought was most interesting was he said, "This is our home."
He did say that Saudi Arabia was their home.
This is our home now. Saudi Arabia is our home. And he was out there going like, all of the sports and entertainment are going to be, you know, the biggest events are going to be from here. And, you know, when he went, when they went and did the deal, and they weren't the first to do the deal, but they were one of the first. When they went to do the deal, you know, it was, you know, I mean, very heavily criticized. And at the end of the day, money talks, and now everybody's doing the deal, and everyone's going there, and UFC's even going there, and for the kind of money they're offering, you know, in a free market business, you know, Saudi Arabia accomplished, and is in, you know, they're accomplishing everything they set out to do with this goal, and the goal was to change the image of the country from the one with all of the human abuses and everything like that, and to instead make it the new Las Vegas, you know, with, you know, all the big events and all the big things and this beautiful arena and this, you know, this is the home of WWE now. And, it's, you know, I mean, like when Vince said that, there was a part of me that was just like, oh, it's so kind of sad. And there was part of me that said, you know what? I mean, you can't get mad at Vince when he's telling the truth. And, you know, I mean, he's probably not wrong on this one. And, you know, I thought it was interesting because, you know, one of the reporters out there was brought up the Dana stuff, you know, the Dana stuff with Vince. Because Dana White, earlier in the week, basically he did an interview where he was just like, you know, like, Vince is great with me now, but my God, I think it was Wednesday night. He just goes, my God, you know, like, you know, he put me through so much and he was, you know, all the stuff, you know, and all the stuff when Vince is competing with you that he puts you through. And the Mike Goldberg thing, the Joe Silva thing, which people didn't really know. But the Goldberg thing, everybody knew, you know, trying to, you know, that was definitely one of the greatest attempted dirty tricks. And if someone wasn't as professional as Mike Goldberg, given the amount of money that was offered, most people, you know, that, you know, would have taken the money. And UFC would have been out there, you know, this is years ago. But they would have been out there for a live show with no announcer. And then the guy who was supposed to announce our show would be showing up as the lead announcer on Raw at the same time. I mean, it was actually one of, you know, when it comes to Vince's tricks, it actually probably would have been the, probably the best one ever, I would say. I don't know. Is there anyone that, where somebody showed up like that? I mean, like, you could say, you know, when Hogan and Gene and Roddy, but Roddy Piper was not an unprofessional thing. Roddy Piper gave notice to Crockett, and Crockett knew about Roddy Piper. Now, did Vern know about Hogan, Gene, and Dave Schultz all showing up on Vince's show at the same time? No, he did not. So that was a big one, but it wasn't, and they, you know, Hogan did no-show Vince's show, and then he did show up 2 days later, but this would have been, you know, like the last moment when, you know, like, I mean, the idea was that Mike Goldberg would go to wherever, I forget the city that UFC ran that night, but he would be there, he would be in the city, he'd be preparing for the show, and then, like, you know, whatever it is, 2-3 hours kind of slip away, end up on Raw, you know, and as the new lead announcer on Raw. And, they did that. I thought it was interesting because, you know, of course, now Vince and Dana are, you know, on the same team. And Vince was, one of the people who was working on the Saudi Arabia deal for UFC. And, you know, like, basically that, you know, Dana's just praising Vince. And even when Vince was, you know, trying to bust Dana's balls or whatever it was, or what Dana thinks anyway, I mean, Dana would never knock Vince, you know. I mean, even personally, you know, like, even privately, I would say, you know, because I talked to Dana about Vince many times, and I think that there may have been like a, you know, a frustration here and there. I mean, but as far as knocking him personally, he always praised him. He always talked about, you know, like, look, I mean, you know, whatever, you know, I mean, Dana's the same type of cutthroat anyway, but it was like whatever Vince you would say, you always could look at his ratings, because no matter what, one of the goals of UFC is ratings, and they never could do WWE ratings ever. Yes, they could do better pay-per-views, yes, they could do bigger live gates, but they could never do bigger ratings. And for whatever reason, and I think that I think Vince, you know, and again, like, he called Vince the Michael Jordan of business, which I think is a little bit of an exaggeration. I think the Michael Jordan of business would probably be like somebody like Warren Buffett or Bill Gates. I mean, but whatever. You know, they're on the same team now. But I thought that when one of the reporters actually brought up the Dana stuff, and, you know, I think Vince had no idea of those comments because, you know, I don't think that he really seemed to remember anything, because when they talked about Dana, and then Undertaker kind of goes like, you're kind of the same, you're both alpha males, maybe that's some of it, because Undertaker probably knew a little bit about it. And then Vince gave this look, and it was just like, I don't think he liked that Undertaker said that him and Dana were like the same for whatever reason. And Vince kind of made a comment, you know, about, well, if they're in my way and stuff. But it was very you know, very interesting stuff, I suppose.
Well, we got to talk about the Bryan Danielson injury. He's got a cracked orbital bone and I believe underwent surgery and is going to be out quite a while.
They said
all stemming from the Wednesday Dynamite show and another match with Okada where he broke a bone.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad in the sense that I felt like when they announced that, you know, I mean, like, he was at the end, I thought that he was just selling because we're right on camera and everything like that. But they basically on the air said they didn't know if it was Orange Cassidy or Okada, that where he got hurt. And the deal is that, I know they were hoping that he wouldn't need surgery and it would be minor, but they did know he was hurt that night. And, you know, I think if I, like, with, you know, it, Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole both, this has got to be so frustrating. Because it's one thing if you have, like, a bad knee and it just keeps going out. You know what I mean? And then it's, when you have something like that, there's kind of like this sign to me, like, you know, when, you know, you can't, your knee can't handle it anymore. Or your back is just in so much pain constantly. And guys will always still try to come back for the money and for the glory and you know, because they like wrestling. But you kind of know it. You know in the back of your head you've got this injury. But with these guys, it's like they keep getting hurt, but it's different injuries. So it's not like, if he broke the arm again, you know, broke the forearm once again, it would be like, oh God, the you know, maybe it's a sign that this bone is not going to hold up to this, you know, or if he hurt his neck again, that he hurt his neck years ago. But it's new injuries, which is weird. Not weird. It's just, I think it's maybe more depressing. But it's like, you know, he comes back. I mean, look at this entire run in AEW. I mean, he'll do these incredible matches for a while, and then he gets hurt. And, you know, then he does, you know, lays out for a couple months, comes back. When he had the concussion last year, I mean, there was fear that that was it, you know, that he may not be able to come back, because Tony Khan even said once that, you know, it was like, you know, I was at this point where it was like, I may have to just pay him for the remainder of the contract and just accept that, you know, it's over. You know, because of the concussion, the recovery from the concussion, it was, and you know, he's had the concussion history, but this was a completely new injury. I don't recall him. I know he had a detached retina when he was in the Ring of Honor days, but I don't recall, and he's ever broken an orbital bone. I know. Do you remember any?
I don't remember a broken orbital bone.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a lot of injuries. I mean, throughout his career, you know, I mean, he's probably had everything hurt at one point or another because of just the kind of style that he works. Not that it's a stupid style, but just he's just, you know, he's just gotten hurt a lot wrestling a very hard style. And, I, you know, that aspect on a national stage, you know, I mean, he wants to do like all the guys at his level everyone, they want to do great matches. They're driven to do great matches. And, you know, it's in their mind and it's in their blood. And, you know, it's just unfortunate. But I think on this, I was just like so depressed for him when he got hurt on this one. You know, I don't know if he makes the January 4th Tokyo Dome. The way they talked, it was almost like they were saying, you know, Claudio did a promo saying, you know, he wants Orange. They're going to have that match this week, Wednesday. And that he wants Okada. So it made me think that maybe they're either he is going to be the guy.
My presumption is that he said that in case he is the guy.
Yeah.
And if
yeah.
Danielson's back, then Danielson will do the Okada match.
Well, it may be touch and go if he had surgery for January 4th. Hopefully he can do it. Hopefully he can finish the next however many months it is. You know, I mean, he didn't put a timeline exactly when next year he's going to be done. You know, in theory, his contract would be over in September. Obviously, you know, Tony could extend it, but he's not going to be a dirty guy in the situation if Brian wants to be finished. If Brian said, you know, promised, you know, that he's going to be finished, you know, at the end of this contract, and he wants to be finished, you know, and there's nothing you can do if he wants to quit. You guy can always quit. You know, the thing, he just couldn't go to WWE. And I don't think he's going to go back to WWE at this point anyway. Not that he's got anything against WWE. And you never say never. I don't want to say he would never do it, but, you know. But, you know, I just was really hoping that he would be able to get through without too many serious injuries and have a good last year. You know, because, I mean, when he's been in the ring this year, he's been nothing but great this year. But, yeah. And it's unfortunate because AEW's built a lot around him. And now, you know, again, Adam Cole's the same way. It's like Adam Cole nearly ends his career with a concussion, comes back, and then breaks his ankle and has surgery. You know, and it's not like it was another concussion. So if it was another concussion, it sort of tells you that, you know, you may have to get out. But it's a new injury, which almost has to make it frustrating because he just came back and he was in a hot program and this stuff weighs, you know, again, when you've got guys that care so much and these guys care so much, it's part of their livelihood and life and how their, you know, heart beats, and to be put out over and over again. I mean, it's got to be really rough. It's part of the business, but they've both been, you know, guys get hurt all the time, but when you know, get two major injuries or three, or in case of Danielson, it's been four since he's been there. You know, it can be pretty tough.
AEW tag team titles.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. So, on the Collision show, you know, they had Dax and Ricky Starks do a match, and I figured, you know, normally, you know, the challenger wins, and Ricky Starks won that match. And so I don't think that that tag title match is coming up. The last I heard is that they may do Big Bill and Ricky Starks against the Young Bucks at Full Gear, but that's not official. It was just one of many different things that was kind of thrown out there. So we've got to see how this all turns out, but even so, under any circumstances,
didn't the Bucks just win that number one contenders match?
The Bucks won the number one contenders match, and it's never been talked about since.
Yes,
it's never been brought up. They did the match, you know, like on any show. They've never had them do any interviews, and Big Bill and Ricky Starks have never talked about the Young Bucks. I don't believe. I haven't seen every single interview that's been done, but I've seen most. But there's been no talk at all about them going for the titles since they won that thing. So, and it's not a sure thing. I mean, that's what's going to happen, but it is a thing that could happen. So that's kind of where things stand. So much of the stuff is, you know, I mean, if you follow AEW, you know that a lot of the stuff is being decided at much later periods than previous. You know, guys are getting their information on what they're doing later, and decisions are being made later. So that's just how it is. I mean, there's times, you know, the day of the show where you don't even know. It's almost at times like we used to talk about WWE.
There's actually a lot of that.
Yeah. So, you know, which is also can be, it's which is also very frustrating for talent, you know, when, you know, I mean, it's like a lot of the guys have a lot of input on what they're doing. So they're doing stuff, but they don't really know a long-term direction. So they're doing stuff and they're coming up with ideas. But when you don't really know exactly a long-term direction, then you're kind of like coming up with ideas week by week too. But you don't know where the ultimate thing is, and maybe the ultimate thing hasn't even been decided. So that's one of the reasons that the shows are like the shows are.
Last week, there was an open challenge by Alpha Academy, and answering the challenge this weekend was the Creeds.
Yeah.
So Raw tomorrow will be Alpha Academy versus the Creed Brothers. And Creed's obviously have done some stuff for Main Event, and I think some of the other shows, but never Raw or SmackDown. So,
well, I was told
big night for them tomorrow night.
I was told tonight that right now, you know, barring you know any changes, and it was like not like it's 100%, but right now they're being called up. So, you know, I mean, which also means they should win.
Well, they should win if they're getting called up, yes.
Yeah, even, I mean, they should win anyway. I mean, but, you know what? I mean, when it comes to them, you know, it's like, you know what? They're about, I think it's about time for them to be called up, honestly. I mean, they're a little rough around the edges. They're impressive as hell.
They've improved a ton in the last year.
Yeah. I mean, there was a time where it's like my mentality was, and I'm sure it's the same as theirs. You know, it's like these guys have the chance to be really big stars, and they're very, very high on Julius as a singles. But they'll probably start as a tag team. And, you know, the deal, you know, in the sense of it's like don't put them on that show on the show before they're ready, because a lot of guys have been brought up too early and pushed too early, and it ends up backfiring, you know. And you could make arguments that they're not quite all the way there, even though, you know, Julius will impress people with what he does, and Brutus too, to a different degree. But I think it's time, you know.
The thing too is like they've improved so much, and at some point you're going to start getting diminishing returns working with the same teams in developmental. And, you know, if you go back all the way to when Lesnar got called up.
Lesnar was called up early because they were in a rush.
He was, but you know what? He was called up, and the next thing you know, he's in the ring with great guys all the time.
And he got much better.
And he got real good real quick. And,
yeah.
You know, the Creed's going up and working good teams on a regular basis. I mean, I think they're good to go now. I think
they're certainly in there with the perfect opponents, because Chad Gable is a fantastic wrestler. And the thing with Otis is, if they throw Otis around, and they can do that, you know, it'll get over. So, yeah, I think it's about time for them. I think it's time for Bron Breakker too. You know, it's funny because when
I'll spend time with for Bron for a while.
Yeah, when Bron Breakker first went there and was so impressive so quickly, you know, right off the bat, really. I remember being told that, you know, Bron Breakker is probably not going to spend much time in developmental. And then the focus on developmental changed in the sense that, you know, developmental wasn't just pure developmental. Developmental was about storylines and ratings and things like that. And they wanted, you know, and Bron Breakker became a star there. So they wanted to keep him as a star on that brand. So they weren't in such a rush to bring him up. And there's no reason to rush anyone because, you know, I mean, WWE main roster's doing fine, but like, there's people there. You know, Bron Breakker's the one that sticks out. Hey, and Hayes too. You know, for that matter, and Ilya too. I mean, these guys really, you know, Ilya. You know, I mean, Dragunov really. I mean, the only thing I have with Dragunov is that will they try to tone down his style on the main roster?
Well, of course. I mean, with exceptions of people like Gunther. I mean, if you remember the match he had on NXT with Dominic, that's you're going to be your main roster Ilya.
Yeah,
which was still a good match.
Well, he's a great
wrestler.
But he's
not out there smashing dudes like he did with Carmelo at the last pay-per-view or Trick or any of these guys of late.
But I mean, he's
but I think with the right guy on pay-per-view, he'll still have those matches.
Oh, you put him and Gunther on pay-per-view, they'll have a match of the year candidate.
Or Sheamus.
Every time.
You know, guys like that.
Yeah, Drew. I mean, there's a lot of
Drew, yeah.
Yeah, but the other thing, too, is again, the size. You know what I mean? Like, guys that size, not that they never get over or not get a chance, but it's much easier if you're shorter to be a star in NXT than it is on Raw or SmackDown. Even with Vince gone, because, you know, you still have the situation where you're in there with a lot of bigger guys. But I mean, I think that Dragunov is so fantastic, he'll overcome it. Although I've been wrong on people on that one, too. So I don't think that's, I would not say it's a lock, but I think that it probably would happen. And Hayes is the same way, you know, in a sense. But Hayes is ready. He can do the talk. He's got charisma. You know, there's, you know, I mean, you know, obviously, like, Tyler Bates ready. But at the same time, I don't think Tyler Bates going to ever get a big push on the main roster. You know, Noam Dar is the same, you know, maybe someday. Who knows? But I mean, but Braun is one of those guys who they will push. He's got the size. He's got the body. He's got the great, great athletic ability, the explosiveness. I think, and he's been in NXT. He's been champion. It's kind of like they're probably not going to put the title back on him. Although, you know, he did do the promo of if Carmelo wins, it's going to be me and you again. But it's kind of like he's done everything in NXT he can do, I think. You know, I mean, you know, they did the heel turn with him and, you know, he's had time doing that. But, you know, I mean, not like it's any rush, but he's ready. It'll be, you know, but yeah, it was, you know, it can change. Dragon Lee, obviously, you know, and that was a touch and go. And I mean, I know that Dragon Lee was hoping by April, you know, next year that he would be on the main roster. And obviously he beat that by about six months, basically. So, you know, he's full time, doing well, you know, there. So, we're seeing more of that migration.
All right. The rest of Raw has Seth Rollins and JD McDonagh, DIY versus Imperium, Natty versus Chelsea in a trick or street fight, Dominic versus Ricochet, and Xia Li versus Candice. So that's the Raw lineup for Halloween Eve. Later on tonight.
Yeah.
All right, before we get into the two shows here, you saw the Miyahara match.
Yeah. Well, the one from last weekend, yeah. By the way, I guess there's a lot of rumors as far as, you know, Katsuyuki Nakajima had his last match with Noah. And, you know, obviously I think there's a lot of talk of New Japan. Although he did an angle on this show last week, on the All Japan show after the Yuma Aoyagi Triple Crown defense against Kento Miyahara. After the match was over and Miyahara lost the match, Nakajima came out holding flowers and attacked Miyahara with the flowers, which leads me to believe that there will be, and there was always scheduled. I mean, the you know, they had that match of the year candidate, really one of the best matches of the year, the Miyahara and Nakajima match. And it was in Noah. And the idea always was that there would be a rematch in All Japan. So it looks like that's being built up no matter what happens at some point. But, you know, Miyahara and Aoyagi, I thought they had a fantastic match last weekend. Typical, you know, I think it was like 29 minutes and doesn't, you know, Miyahara is one of the, he's one of the best I've ever seen when it comes to pacing a match. It's like he works so, you know, slow isn't the right word, you know, like, but it's paced so well that you don't feel like the match is going as long as it really is. And it builds so, I mean, everything that with Miyahara and Aoyagi, the things, they're so crisp at what they do. Everything they do looks great. They, you know, they are not patterned. You know what I mean? It's like you know that they're moves, but you don't know when they're coming. You don't see them being set up in as much as you might see with a lot of people. And like the knees and stuff, they're, you know, just great sound effects. Everything sounds so solid. And then the other thing is that they, you know, I think Miyahara is fantastic at building to a crescendo. You know, in the sense of, like, Will Ospreay, just an example, you know, one of the best wrestlers in the world, right? and very good at this. But even he, Okada is very good at this, is actually excellent at this. But Miyahara is one of these guys where I think when it comes to the art of building a match to where it really, where it's good all the way, and you know you're watching a great match, and then in the last 3 minutes it goes from, you know, really good to fantastic, and then it peaks perfectly in the last, you know, minute and a half, but the great last 5 minutes. And this was the perfect, like almost like a perfect example of a match like that. I just thought, just a really great job. That just brings up something in my mind, which is, Billy Corgan. You know, he did the NWA, their pay-per-view, and they may be getting on CW, and I guess they are probably getting on CW, which is actually a great breakthrough, you know, for, you know, I mean, CW, it's the weakest of the networks, and their ratings are not particularly good from a network standpoint. However, I mean, it's you know, I think that last year, of all the TV stations in the United States, it was number 29, which is, I mean, it's much higher than Access. It's much higher than a lot of stations. You know, I mean, it's a viable station. From just the fact that the station it's on, it should be, you know, it should have a decent audience. I mean, it's not gonna be AEW Dynamite audience or anything like that, I don't think. I mean, maybe it'll stun us and it will, but I don't think so. But it will be in more homes. It will have more coverage. But, a couple weeks ago, whatever it was, he did some interview and it was just like, you know, I don't want my guys, whatever it was, doing matches that like Dave Meltzer likes. And I was just thinking, like, so you don't want guys doing matches that build, and you don't want guys doing matches that have drama. I mean, what do you want? You want guys to have crappy matches?
I think that he thinks that you like something. I don't know, man. You've heard the criticism 1,000 times. You only like flips and shit like that. You know.
But
he can't possibly believe that, but that's what he said.
But you can't possibly read and think that.
Well, does he read?
He used to. He subscribed for years.
Well, does he now? Maybe he doesn't.
But if you read and subscribed for years, it's not like, okay, you know, it's not like...
Well, you know, there are a lot of people that read and subscribed for years and lost their minds, Dave. You're well aware of this.
That's true.
Yes.
But I mean, it's like you don't want, you know, Gunther matches. You don't want, you know, I mean, it just kind of blew my mind.
Old NWA title matches with Terry Funk and Ric Flair.
You don't want Ric Flair matches. You don't want Terry Funk matches. You don't want, you know, I mean, like any style that's good. I think that, you know, one of the things is that, I mean, it's funny because, like, again, like when I first started hearing this, I went to like Cage Match. It's like, am I off on this stuff? And so, like, you know, look, you know, there's going to be quarter star, half star differences and things like that. You know, it's, you know, I mean, I have them with my best friends. You know, where you know, look, whenever there's a big match, you know, I'll get a bunch of people who are gonna text me. And it's like, look, we're all within a quarter star, sometimes a half star, and it's like, yeah, you know, this match is great, this match sucks, whatever. You know, it's not, no one's ever gonna be exactly, but you're usually not gonna be too far off. So anyway, I went in there and the first match that I saw where I was like legitimately off on the consensus of the greatest matches that they had was like, it's like in the 300s. It's like the top 300. It was almost all, you know, pretty much the same. You were within a quarter star, half star. Then there was a match. It was a Japanese women's match.
You went through 300 matches and compared your star rating to...
Well, it only takes a second to do it. If you look at it, you just go right down and it's like, you know, they have their number, I have my number. So it was in the 300s. And it was a match from 1995, and it was a Japanese women's match that I gave 3.5 stars to, that, you know, their consensus was probably, you know, 4.25 or 4.5. It was a pretty freaking highly rated match, which was more of a brawl. And, you know, I think that the real, you know, whatever, you know, I mean, I know that, like, I am more when it comes to cage match, which is whatever. It's like I know that like I'm more into storytelling matches than they are, because the real good storytelling matches I do rate higher than they do. I probably have more of an affinity for Lucha Libre just because I grew up on it more than a lot of other people. Although I didn't really, you know, I probably have that. But aside from that, you know, I mean, I know that that cage match that those people favor more, you know, the really, you know, the beat the shit out of you, stand there, know a thing, you know, which I mean, I appreciate and I like, you know what I mean? I mean, it's like if it gets the crowd going, I'm not a big fan of beat the shit out of people to, you know, just beat the shit out of each other with no crowd reaction. Just not, because it's like if you're beating the shit out of the other guy and the crowd's not reacting, it's like do something else. You know what I mean? It's like the stuff hurts, but whatever. Right? But it's just like I just found it to be like really weird. And then Billy went, you know, and I just kind of made fun of it, and then he just gets all off and blah blah blah, and then all, you know, it's like what a. I mean, there's all kinds of controversy, but like controversy that like you want people to have like. Not good matches that are, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you know, I mean, it's like, it's not like that is, again, like people go, well, WWE doesn't, you know, have great matches. Look at the business. You know, the matches, match quality is a very, very, very small part of business. You know, business is about exposure. Business is about building characters. Business is about, you know, more than anything else. It's just, you know, right now, business is mostly about just, who's number one and who's number two and who's number three. I mean, like Impact just did a great pay-per-view, and with one of the best matches of the year, but they're still, it's not like they're going to grow, their business is going to grow in any appreciable way. I mean, it can grow a little bit, you know, it can get a little bit of a buzz, and the only way you're really going to get a buzz is to have, you know, a personality who clicks, or someone who, you know, even great matches all the time is that's not going to change your business. You know, I mean, like with AEW, you know, great matches without the right storyline and the right build and things like that. It's fine and it's good, but that's not, and it's never been like that. I mean, you know, some people, you know, the 1989 book just came out, and, you know, I mean, one of our readers, you know, wrote me and just goes, you know, I already knew this. That's what they say. Like, I already knew this, but reading the 1989 book really told me, it just emphasized kind of what we're going through right now. And it's like, you got one company who's doing all kinds of great matches, but they're such a distant second. And they just are. And having all those Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat matches, they didn't draw in that year. Flair and Steamboat drew great in the Carolinas in other periods, in the late 70s and the early 80s. But the 1989 matches that were considered all-time classics and were, they were not big draws at all. You know, compared to WWE, or just even compared to a good period of the WCW years, you know, during, you know, the NWO years, the Nitro years, you know, the big years, they were not even close to that. Then they were not even close to what Jim Crockett Promotions was drawing two, three years earlier, you know, with matches that were, you know, many, many, many very, very good matches, but not that level of classic matches. And it just, that's the basic gist, is that it was, you know, it's like great matches are not going to, it's great matches, is not going to be your business difference, but crappy matches are not superior to great matches. Like if WCW had all crappy matches and didn't have those great matches, it's not like their business would have been better. It probably would have been worse. It's just that, you know, they were number two. And, you know, whether it's, no matter what it is, when you're number two and you're a solid number two, it's a hard position to be in. And that's why Crockett went down. It's like WCW had all those problems for years, is because no matter how good, you know, and no matter how good the product was, they were established number two. And, you know, it's just a situation that AEW's in. And yeah, you know, if WWE is caught way behind the times, they can be surpassed. Or they do a really bad job, they can be surpassed for a while. But when WWE is doing good, the inherent advantage of being number one, and now, you know, it's a very different number one. I mean, like in the 1980s, you know, if you, or 1990s, if you went and rated WWE. Like if when Ted Turner got in 1988, right? And if he went in there and goes, I'm going to beat WWE. I'm going to go out there and offer everyone more money than they're making. Almost everyone's coming at that point if you're going to get more money, because that's what people are in the business for. He didn't do that. You know, his thing was, is we want to keep this TV show and we want it to, we want to make a profit on this, which they never really did until years later, but we don't want to spend a lot of money. We just, you know, we'll pay more for the top guys that we got. But it was never a, they wanted to beat Vince, but it was never about rating Vince. The one time they did, you know, beat Vince for a while under Eric, you know, it was because they spent money and got many of Vince's top guys, most of them. You know, Hogan was the biggest of the big at the time. You couldn't get anyone bigger. And, you know, so that, but you can't do that now because, you know, unless, you know, the only way to do it, I mean, as much money as the cons have, and I mean, you know, I mean, number one, guys are locked up for long, long-term contracts, and they're getting paid extremely well. I mean, you know, the only way that, like I said, is like if you want to go in there and you've got someone who, you know, the Saudis, and they're not going to go against Vince because wrestling's not that important. I mean, and they go in there and offer everyone, you know, like what they did with golf, right? And you know, yeah, you could do it. You could in time, with incredible, incredible losses for years, but in time when you buy everyone, you can do it. But, you know, it's not going to happen.
Well, we got the AEW Collision Show to talk about, which was largely a show until the main event.
There was nothing. Well, I mean, the Starks match was good, but it really was all about the main event.
Jay White beat A.R. Fox in the
opener. That was a good match.
They had 4,000 people here, and I mean, the notable thing about the show was the stuff involving MJF and the stuff involving people involved with MJF all had good heat, but...
Yeah, MJF was super over.
The stuff on the show not involved in those storylines did not have good heat. No. The Guns beat Dalton Castle's boys, just a quick squash match. We had Akarshid and Abaddon in a Fright Night fight, which was not good, and did not have any heat until they got pumpkins at the end. Crowd did love the pumpkins.
The people did pop really big for the pumpkin spots.
Yes.
But it was actually like I felt watching it kind of like this is pretty bad. But it's like at the end, it's like, well, it got over with the crowd. You know what I mean?
Well, they got the pumpkins over with the crowd. I mean, literally the last minute involving pumpkins got heat, but the rest of it did not.
It wasn't a very good match though.
Nah, Sheeta won with a running knee with a pumpkin on Abaddon's head. And Samoa Joe squashed Rhett Titus.
Very quick, like a minute.
Yeah. And then we had Ricky Starks and Dax Harwood, which, you know, wrestling wise it was a good match, but this also didn't have a lot of heat. And Dax hit a pile driver, Big Bill pulled Dax out of the ring, and then Dax turns around and gets hit with a pile driver, and he is pinned. So Ricky pinned Dax, which tells me there's no title rematch coming anytime soon.
Not this match. I mean, it wouldn't make sense to do it now. But even if, like, again, I guess if Dax would have won, you'd have to do the rematch within the next couple of weeks. And, you know, I mean, one of the things I heard was that Tony didn't want to bounce the belts around that quickly. So, you know, or that many times or whatever that means. But still, I don't know. I thought Dak should have won just because of the way the, you know. I mean, they basically got squashed in the title win. So it was kind of like you need a little redemption. And it's, you know, Ricky Starks has the belt, but it's a tag belt. So he can lose to a guy, you know. But this is what happened. I mean, it was, yeah, my thought going in is that they're probably not going to do the FTR rematch, which actually was originally scheduled for this show.
Then we had House of Black showing up in the ring, and LFI made their big return, La Facción and Gobernable, so looked like they were setting up a 10-man tag or something of that nature for down the road.
Well, they're setting up a million things. I mean, House of Black is feuding with everyone in the world, it seems like. You know, it's interesting because Roush looked so impressive, you know, and then, you know, he had to take some time off and everything. But I mean, he's been gone forever.
Been gone a long time.
Yeah, he's finally back. And I, you know, it's like, I know they like the Ingo Bernabe thing, and it appears that Andrade is not with them. But it's like the other guys, like Drillistico, he's fine. And Preston Vance, whatever. I just think Roush is like, as the leader of a group where the other guys are not big stars, I think that it'd almost be better for him to just be a single. You know, I mean, they like guys in factions and everything, but Roush is a real, like, he's a real intense player. And, you know, I mean, because, you know, like House of Black, I mean, it's like Malakai Black is the star, but like Brody King and Buddy Matthews are really, really good. Like, they're solid guys that you can put way up there. And I don't know that Vance is quite at that level. And Drillistico, while good, I don't know that he's quite at that level here for this country either. So I almost think that it's like putting Roush in a group with guys that aren't good, when Roush, you know, especially like if you remember the match with Danielson, which was just a fantastic match. I think that Roush could be like a, you know, a mainline singles player.
We had Claudio destroying Tracy Williams. He's vowed to beat Orange Cassidy and then take out Okada, even if he has to go to Japan, he noted. And then, yes, the main event was MJF and Kenny Omega for the title. The story was that this was Kenny's last chance to beat MJF and prevent MJF from breaking his record as longest reigning champion. And he did not. MJF beat him. And there was an appearance near the end of Don Callis, and he distracted Kenny for a moment, which prevented Kenny from doing the one-winged angel, but it did not lead directly to the finish.
No, because they went several more minutes.
They went several minutes afterwards. Don got out of there, and finally MJF hit the heat seeker for a near fall. He went for the Panama Sunrise, but Kenny cradled him for a very close near fall that had people booing when the ref said it was only a two. And then he hit the Sunrise, hit his second Heatseeker, got the pin. So he beat him clean. I mean, they did all sorts of things in this match. MJF pulled out a Fosbury flop dive to the outside.
Do you know that MJF is interested in Lucha Libre now?
He wants to be a luchador?
No. I just think he wants to learn.
Really? You know, this guy says he's never watched New Japan? That's what he says.
Oh, I'm sure he's watched it, but... He did a Fosbury flop that didn't come out of nowhere.
He did a Fosbury flop. He did Made in Japan. Yeah. During this match.
Yeah, yeah. That brings up something. I think that you know, I mean, the new pattern now is the main event on Collision is Kevin Kelly leaves and Jim Ross comes in. Now, this show for this match, since it was a 30-minute Kenny Omega,
should have absolutely had Kevin Kelly in there.
Kevin Kelly should have done the play-by-play.
Of course.
I don't care if Nigel left and you want to keep Jim Ross in.
I'll keep everybody there. Who cares? But Kevin's got to be there.
Kevin should have
been the voice of New Japan while Kenny was there.
Kevin should have been the play-by-play guy in that match. I know Tony is the play-by-play guy on the show, and I'm not saying he shouldn't be, but for that match, it's kind of like this is Kevin Kelly's wheelhouse, 30-minute Kenny Omega match, and he wasn't there, and I mean, that's his forte, is making those kind of matches great. And don't get me wrong, I mean, it's like the match was great. It was absolutely a great match either way. But as that match was going on, it really hit me because he wasn't there. And I'm going like, this is the match that Kevin Kelly should be doing play-by-play for.
So afterwards, they had Joe and Hobbs both watching on backstage. And MJF offered the handshake.
And also, and Wardlow.
And Wardlow, and Kenny gave it to him as the show went off the air, so they shook hands.
And then after the match, after the show went off the air, Max did a big promo putting over Kenny Omega, and this stuff is hard. He's laying there going, this stuff is hard.
It is hard, especially they had a great, with Kenny Omega for 30 minutes.
They had a great match. So the you know, it's like, I don't know how to view, I mean, again, it was a short build. For such a big match, they did a finish. Like, I was hoping they would do a finish that would leave an opening for a rematch. And you could still do a rematch off of this, but not easily. Like, it was definitely, when I watched the finish, it felt like it was just it, the finish was all about putting Max over, and Kenny's there to put Max over. It was not there to build a rematch.
Well, and yes, the actual direct finish was not, but if you go back 3 minutes earlier, the big spot 3 minutes earlier was three straight V-triggers lifting the guy up for the one-winged angel, and it was done. And that's when Don ran down and distracted Kenny, so the guy fell off of him. So in theory, you can use that as,
but there,
you know,
but there's always something in every match where you have that, you know, like where the guy comes really close. But I mean, like, the finish itself was a finish designed not to build a rematch.
Well, not an immediate rematch.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got 50 opponents right now. So if they do this match,
Of course
next you May or something like that.
Of course you could do it in 6 months. Of course you could.
Yes.
But it didn't leave, like, when it was over, it wasn't like, put it this way, when it was over, it wasn't like people were going like, oh, man, you know, it was like, this was not settled. I mean, it very much came across when it was over, it's like, this is settled. And
well, the idea behind the match was, who's the better man? Like, who's the guy that is the greatest AEW champion of all time? That's a story they were trying to tell in the match.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's breaking the record, so quite frankly, he may as well tell the story that on this day, he's the better man. Who knows about 6 months from now? But, you know, they delivered what they promised.
Well, I mean, Max had to win.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, because the fact is like, and I mean, they did a good job, and they said, like, you know, if Kenny Omega wins, he's going to wrestle Jay White, and they even gave lip service to it, like, you know, Jay White beat Kenny Omega for the U.S. title, his first big championship win. So I mean, they didn't like blow off that thing at all. I mean, it was there. So, but yeah, he had to win. They've been building up the Jay thing, and it, you know, again, it was, you know, if it wasn't the time for Kenny Omega to win the championship, I just thought that you could make it more ambiguous. But I also knew that there was a good chance that they wouldn't. You know, it was, you know, again, like, it's very clear that they, you know, I just felt that, like, MJF and Kenny Omega should have been a pay-per-view match, but for time, and many people did, but for timing wise, because of the record and the fact that it was, you know, it's only a couple of days before the record, and it made all the sense in the world to do the match before Max breaks.
Well,
the
hold on a second. Hold on a second. Yes. Hold on a second.
Yes.
Kenny Omega was the longest reigning AEW champion of all time.
Yes.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
They did not have to do a match where the guy whose record that he broke challenged him.
No, but it's perfect booking to do it.
Well, it is, except this should have been a pay-per-view match. You didn't have to do it. You could have saved this for pay-per-view if you wanted to, and it would have been fine. It would have been fine.
It would have had to have been in the last pay-per-view.
No, my point is you didn't have to do this. You didn't have to.
You don't have to.
It would have been fine to not do it and to save it for pay-per-view.
You don't have to do anything.
There's no law here, except for the law of making money. I mean, fine with them doing it. I mean, it's not an inevitable match anytime soon. But, yeah. I mean, you didn't have to do this. You don't have to, every time someone's about to break a record, have the, you know, previous title holder challenge them.
Oh, I think that makes perfect sense to do it, though. It's a story.
Well, of course it makes sense. It's been done a million times, but you don't have to. I can tell you a million things that'll make sense, but you don't have to do them. You can save it for pay-per-view.
Yes. Yeah, but then you've lost the whole thing of the guy, you know, breaking the record by beating the guy, which is a perfect thing to do.
It is. I mean, but you know what? You did that perfect thing on a Collision show on a Saturday night with 3 days build. So what was, you know, at the end of the day?
I agree.
What was the point? You didn't have to do it.
I agree. I know. I completely agree. No. So we got a super match.
We did get a super match. That is
true. We got a super match on a Saturday night. There's nothing wrong with super matches. I mean, it's like I it fit. You know, it's like, would it have been better on Wednesday? Yes, I think it would have been better on Wednesday. More people would have watched it. It would have been the same exact story. But, you know, they wanted to go around.
Well, ideally, it would have been better on Wednesday if they had built it up in September.
For 2 weeks.
Or something like that.
Well, you know what?
We had plenty of time to know about it, to build. Because, listen, you know, if you want to build for a month and do it on Wednesday and do a big number because you've got a TV deal that's going to be hopefully renewed at a better rate soon and you want to use that as a big number, that's one thing. 3 days build for Collision, you should have saved it for pay-per-view.
Well, the 3 days build, obviously, you know, was not optimum at all. And no, I mean, they should have started talking about, literally, they should have started talking about it 5 weeks out.
Sure.
And they talked about it for a week. And then they announced the match on the Wednesday before the Saturday, which was late in the game. And they didn't even, you know, I mean, even for the local market, I mean, they sold some tickets at the end. But, you know, I would think that with more time and everything, you know, they would have been able to make it bigger. That's the breaks. It happened. We got a great match with not much of a build. Actually, a super match. One of the, you know, I think one of the two best matches ever on Collision. And, you know, but, you know, whatever it is, yeah, it didn't have a great build.
So a couple of notes.
I mean, well, let me say this. They did, on Friday night, do a really good job building it. But it was on Friday night, you know, on Rampage.
Then you had a one-day build with the good video.
It was, and then, well, they did stuff on Wednesday as well. But it was a rushed build. It wasn't badly done the last couple of days, but it started very late. That's for sure.
So we had a couple of notes from SmackDown. The one thing I thought was very good on the show was that LA Knight is a weak challenger.
They positioned him really strong.
He, in the opening segment at the contract signing, ended up outsmarting Roman Reigns and putting Jimmy Uso through a table. And then Jimmy Uso was told by Roman to take care of this guy later. So they did a main event with LA Knight and Jimmy Uso, and LA Knight won with his finish. And then Roman Reigns tried to jump him from behind, and LA avoided the spear, sent him into the corner, and hit him with his move, and laid out Roman Reigns. Yeah. So they did everything they could to convince you that this weak challenger, who you know is not going to win, maybe is going to win, even though he's not. So that was good.
Okay.
That's what you got to do.
Okay. Here's the thing. I don't think the fans see him as a weak challenger.
They may not.
The fans are really into him.
They are really into him. But like, the question is, do they really believe that in Saudi Arabia he is beating Roman Reigns? And my guess is that deep down, they probably don't think that's going to happen.
Deep down, they don't.
Yes.
But I think it's enough to where I expect, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I expect if Roman Reigns wins, the same stuff. Look, you know, I mean, everybody knew Jey Uso wasn't going to win. You know, you knew that. Like with Cody Rhodes, no, a lot of people expected Cody Rhodes to win. With Sami Zayn,
I think everybody almost.
Yeah, I know. With Sami Zayn, I think people thought there was a good chance because of Montreal and everything. But yeah, I don't think people actually expect him to win. But I don't
actually
think
honestly with Sami. I mean, I thought he had no chance of winning until I think the go home show the Friday before Montreal, where it was just like when that show was over, I thought, you know what? It doesn't matter, dude. You can have this guy win, have him do a short
run.
Yeah,
I never expected him to win.
I thought it was possible after that go-home show.
Yeah, I mean, I knew he wasn't going to win. Cody was the one where I was surprised. And then after Cody won, I figured, you know, he's not losing for at least a year. Nobody else is beating him. But, maybe they'll throw, it's possible. But LA Knight's he's a big time star. It's not like he's, you know, I don't consider him a weak challenger at all going for the championship. But I do agree with you. I don't think anyone expects him to win. I don't think anyone's going to expect anyone to win until WrestleMania. You know, just because he's held the title for this long, and with the exception of Cody, who on the entire roster? You know, maybe if, you know, maybe if they gave Gunther this giant thing, and I don't know if people would expect Gunther to beat him either. You know, even though that's one of those matches where I think that would be really cool to see. And Gunther can be a world champion. But, you know, I wouldn't expect him to win either. The only one I would expect, you know, to have a shot is Cody right now. But they could go in there and go like, look, LA Knight's super hot. He's drawn quarter hours. He's selling a lot of merchandise. I don't expect it, but
he isn't doing anything near what Sammy was doing leading to Montreal, and they didn't change their plans for Sammy. So I do not expect that to happen.
Oh, no, I don't either. I don't either at all. And I don't think anyone does. But no. Yeah, as hot as he is, was he as hot as Cody Rhodes was leading into WrestleMania? No. Was he as hot as Sami Zayn leading into Montreal? Not even close. No. But he's very hot. He's a big deal. They go crazy for him. You know, Cena put him over really strong. The way they did that, man, that I tell you what, that freaking John Cena. I mean, it's like since he came back, they're over 10,000 every single week on Friday night. I mean, they were always drawn well anyway, but when he came back, he is a mover, man. He, you know, he's a difference maker.
Sri Prabhas beat Santo and Carlito when Logan Paul jumped Ray backstage and Santos told Carlito to go help him, but then he was alone, so the Street Profits double-teamed him and pinned him. That sets up the match with Ray and Logan coming up at the pay-per-view. We had Chelsea and Shotzi.
I think that Ray and Logan's a really interesting match.
Well, I think Logan's winning.
Oh, yeah, so do I. Yeah. So do I. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. I think Logan Paul's U.S. champion kind of, you know, he's a big celebrity and everything. I think kind of makes sense. And again, you know, it's like, the guy's freaking great. You know, I mean, all things considered. I mean, you know, I know that they laid the match out and it's a lot easier that way and all that. But man, I mean, like, well, how many matches the guy had? Six?
Like six or seven, yeah.
Unbelievable. And but great ones. I mean, you know, the Roman Reigns match was great. The Seth Rollins match was freaking awesome. The guy is just like one of the most, I have seen very few people historically, you know, I mean, almost nobody. Just, he's like a duck to water in this thing.
We had Shotzi beating Chelsea. It was quick. And then,
So I think it's...
tag match next week, yes.
Yeah, Charlotte Flair and Shotzi against Piper Niven and Chelsea Green. So standard... You know, standard have, you know, beat the tag champion in single to set up a title match thing.
Then we had a Cena segment with Paul Heyman, which this one, I was just flabbergasted because Cena comes out to do a promo and he's trying to sell it like, I've got to beat this guy. I've got to beat Solo Sikoa.
Or I'm washed up.
Yeah, and the fans won't believe in me anymore.
Oh my God.
They're no longer going to support me.
You know what's the funniest thing about that when he's doing that thing? I mean, it's so stupid because the fans are behind him more now. Like, because, you know, he's going, I've been losing and I'm about to lose all the fans' faith in me, right? And it's like, number one, you lost one match to Austin Theory, and in the last 2 years, you know, I mean, you never lose, okay? And the crowd, which forever booed you like crazy, they do nothing but cheer you since you went away, and now you're an all-time legend. And it's like, you can lose 15 straight times, and they're still going to cheer you like crazy because you're a freaking legend, like, you know, Ric Flair was to people before, or Hulk Hogan was to people before. So it's just like that whole thing of, oh, I'm endangered because these fans can see through you and they'll give up on me. And it's like, dude, they booed the hell out of you the whole time you were pushed as the top guy.
Well, the ridiculous thing is Paul Heyman comes out and Paul has to tell some sort of story to make us, you know, want to buy this match or whatever. And so he explains that John Cena is an all-timer. He's one of the best of all time. He's great, blah, blah, blah. But he says they're
trying to sell us that this guy's the greatest of all time.
He says Roman beat you, and he proved that you are not the best in the ring anymore. But you know what? That's okay, because what you are is still the best promo guy ever in the history of WWE. But you know what he says? If Solo hits you with that spike, you'll never be able to talk again. So I thought, okay, like this can't be bullshit, but hey, you know what? You came up with something, so good job. Well,
no,
then,
it's not.
Then
no, it's not.
Hold on a second. Out comes Solo, and they have a brawl, and Solo hits the fucking thumb.
Yeah.
They gave it away.
But here's the thing that's completely ridiculous.
No, that was completely... There's nothing more ridiculous than that. That's the only thing that they gave us was he made thumb him so he can no longer talk, and then they gave it away on this show.
No, you know what's more ridiculous?
God, help me.
Solo has thumbed everyone up and down the card, and no one has been not able to talk.
It doesn't matter, Dave. The point is, maybe he'll get Cena just right, and Cena will never be able to talk again if he gets him with that thumb in this match.
How many times has Sami Zayn been hit with
it? But you know what?
Sami Zayn
already hit him with it. So now what am I buying this show for? Golly, I couldn't believe they gave away the
thumb. Oh, well, to see if Cena beats him or not. But the whole point is like, he Solo hit him with the thumb, hit Sami Zayn with the thumb over and over and over and over. And he never, even ever, was out there with this idea.
Doesn't matter. You know how many people Seth has hit with that buckle bomb? And only one guy got his whole shoulder girdle destroyed for years, and it was Finn Balor. One time he can hit that thumb, Dave. Well, he already hit it.
it doesn't matter. I mean, it's like, I just thought the whole thing was preposterous because...
It was preposterous.
If he'd never done it, if it was like a new move and he did to one guy and then the guy couldn't talk, do one thing, but it wasn't, it's not a new move. Like he needed to make that thing happen. He needed to come up with like some new freaking, you know, oriental crazy karate chop to the throat like they used to do in the 70s or something. Something different, not the freaking move that he uses to finish every single week. So, Dragon but whatever. Lee. They're trying, you know, and whatever. It doesn't matter. John Cena's going to Saudi Arabia, and John Cena's doing a singles match on the show, and that's all that matters. You know, it's a special attraction match. They got, you know, Roman Reigns defending against LA Knight, and John Cena's in a big singles match. It's a bigger pay-per-view than most.
Dragon Lee beats Cedric with the Destino, and then yeah, Cedric not, raises his hand afterwards.
Which they call, what is it, inverted DDT?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Dragon Lee is really into, obviously, New Japan Pro Wrestling, because, you know, he'd copy the Shibata stuff and everything. Shibata was one of his favorites. So now he's copying Naito's move, which was interesting. I mean, here's another one.
He's been doing Dragon that for Lee, a long time.
Yeah, Dragon Lee's really toned down. But his timing and everything, he's great. He's a great wrestler, though. You know, this match could have been fantastic, but I would just call it good.
And we had a Bianca promo where next week she's facing Bayley. She's going to take out every member of Damage Control and get the shot at Io at Crown Jewel. So that's the title match.
Mm.
And then the main event, as noted, was LA Knight beating Jimmy with the BFT. They got This Is Awesome chance, which I thought was quite generous. But the fans loved it. And then, as noted,
LA Knight's really over. That you know, LA Knight did a promo before the main event, and the thing when it was over was like that hit me was he says the same thing in every promo, and it doesn't matter because the people want him to say the same thing in every promo.
Yes,
it's just like and that's great. That's great when you've got an act where you don't even have to be creative. It's all you got to do is go, you know, that's just a fact of life, yeah, and do that delivery, and good for him. You know, I mean, it's clicking. But it's like, man, how lucky is he that he, I mean, like, most people, at least on their promos, have to be creative. He didn't have to do that. He just has to do the catchphrase.
He has to play the hits.
Yeah.
That's all the greats. They just play the hits.
Yeah.
And that's what he's doing here. LA Knight chances the show went off the air. So they got one more Raw tomorrow, as we talked about, and then SmackDown, and then off to Crown Jewel.
Well, SmackDown was already taped, so
that's right. It is a taped show, so
yeah. So this is on Monday. Is actually the last show before, you know, the people who are going probably are all going Monday night. You know, after Raw, you know, the whole crew that's going to Saudi Arabia.
Well, we'll be back tomorrow after Raw. We'll recap the show and talk all of the news. The New Observer is up, and Dave's show with Garrett from Friday is up, and a lot of other stuff as well. So check it all out, everybody. And that's it. We'll talk to you again after a while.